Everybody, this is James,
Marco,
Nabil,
and Mikey.
And welcome to today's podcast. Today we're going to be going over Mikey's mini review of the Toxic Avenger since he is back with us this week. We did not catch him last time. As well as some updates on what we've been watching and our main review of the new 4K remaster of James Cameron's True Lies. So without further ado, let's get into the topic of the week, which is Mikey's mini Oscar review of the Toxic Avenger.
Meet little Melvin. He's a 90-pound weakling. Everyone hated Melvin.
I'm gonna take this mop and shove it down your throat.
They teased him.
I wanna do it with you.
Okay.
They taunted him. They tormented him until he had a horrifying accident and fell into a vat of nuclear waste. Transforming little Melvin into a hideously deformed creature of superhuman size and strength. Melvin became the Toxic Avenger. The first superhero born out of nuclear waste.
Holy shit!
I don't know what it was, but it saved my life.
All right, so we're just picking back up from our last week conversation on our mini Oscar reviews. Mikey, since you're back here, we're going to talk a little bit about your pick. The movie was 1984's The Toxic Avenger. And this is sitting at a 71% Rotten Tomato score. The synopsis goes, Traumaville has a monstrous new hero. The Toxic Avenger is born when meek mop boy Melvin falls into a vat of toxic waste. Try to say that five times fast. Now evildoers will have a lot to lose. This one was directed by Michael Hirst and Lloyd Kaufman, who also did Toxic Avenger Part 2 in 89 and Part 3, The Last Temptation of Toxie in 89. It was also written by Lloyd Kaufman as well as his partner Joe Ritter. This film premiered in France at the Cannes Film Market on May 15th, 1984, with a wide U.S. release on April 11th, 1985. So, Mikey, you had a chance to see this. You may not have seen it the time you were supposed to and gave yourself another chance to see it. I'm not sure. We don't know what's going on here in the last few weeks. You said you were sick. God only knows. So I hope you did watch it. What were your thoughts on the movie?
Just to let you know, I watched this 3 days after the last podcast I was on, so I did watch it right away. I thought this movie was interesting. It definitely doesn't appeal to most people, I would think.
I'm going to go back to just before you go on further. It has a 71% Rotten Tomato score, so it appeals to most people. So I'm going to need to get your facts right here.
Well, I don't agree with that too much. I was shocked on how violent and cheesy the film was. I mean, there are scenes in this that are just like over the top. I know it's done like this on purpose. Like, this studio is known for like the shock value in their movies and like how cheesy and everything is. It's done on purpose, but I have never seen any of the films that this studio has made. So I didn't know that was a thing until I started looking into the film afterwards. I was like, is this done on purpose? And I started looking it up in the film. I kind of figured out it was. But just, I mean, as an example, I mean, like, they hit a kid with a car and then they back over him. I mean, like, it's that kind of stuff. I mean, it's kind of like
explodes,
kind of crazy, right? Yeah, it's pretty nuts. And then they go and like look at it and like are interested in like looking at the body. And I mean, it gets kind of crazy. Like, it's just, it's out there. And I didn't expect that kind of movie. Especially that all happens in like the first like 10 minutes of movie. So it hits you right in the face real quick. It's something that takes you back a little bit if you're not expecting it. It is really high on the violence and gore as well. That doesn't really bother me. I mean, I watch a lot of horror movies with, you know, body dysmorphia and stuff like that here. So that doesn't really hit me as hard as it will some people. But overall, I didn't expect how violent and how cheesy, especially the first half of this movie is. It's a lot to take in the beginning. I didn't think the first half was very good. I was like, this is going to be a lot and I'm not going to like this movie. But the second half of the movie actually did have some redeeming qualities. That's when all the violence comes in. This becomes the Toxic Avenger and the accident happens and he gets his powers and stuff. So after that part, I did actually enjoy the movie and it kind of brought it up for me a little bit. There's still some stuff that is still over the top and crazy, but it kind of fits the movie at that point. I got used to it. So overall, I didn't mind the film. I didn't think it was terrible. I also didn't think it was great.
You want to know what something weird about this film is that this was also a cartoon show later, and I watched it regularly, never seen the film at the time.
Yep.
Toxic Crusaders.
Yeah. With his friends of superheroes or toxic
superheroes. I had the toys in the bill.
I had some of them too, Marco, because they were at Mac Frugal's. They did. That's how I had them, man. Because we bought cheap toys sometimes when we were kids, and somehow I had coloring books of the Toxic Crusaders for some reason.
Like, yeah, coloring books.
Never seen the movies. I knew there was like a movie, but obviously there's no way I would watch this.
No. So Mikey, now you've obviously expressed your disdain for some of the extreme campiness and some of the slow parts of the beginning and the before it got to the gory horror parts. But was there anything you really liked about it? You said you liked the second half. Was it more just, you know, him becoming the Toxic Avenger, or was there something more to it that you felt was redeeming of the movie?
No, I mean, that is exactly what it is. The parts I liked were the Toxic Avenger parts. All the fighting scenes and there's actually a chase scene in a car a little bit in there. All those kind of action-y scenes were, you know, somewhat enjoyable to me. And it kind of redeems the movie for me. So the second half of the movie, I didn't mind at all. I actually liked it. And if the first half hadn't have been as out there as it was, I probably would have, you know, liked the movie overall. I would have enjoyed it much more, actually. So,
yeah, it's truly held a cult status, especially the first film. I think there was a total of four. There was three more after this one, and they, as far as I've not seen them in a long time, but as I remember, they do not do any better than this. This is the peak. So it kind of goes downhill from there even more so.
Well, I heard the next two, so two and three, were kind of tamed a little bit. So they tried to like fix, you know,
with the popularity of the cartoon and stuff, they were trying to not go PG-13, but just bring it down a little bit more. Yeah. So it had a broader audience.
The cartoon didn't come out until after the third movie.
I thought it was after the second one. Maybe
second and third movie are shot back to back and released in the same year. So
probably then, yeah.
But then I did hear number four is actually more brutal than number one. So I don't know if they just.
And they're all terrible. All terrible. I don't know.
And they're remaking it. I think it's coming out this year or so.
Yeah, it already released last year in Fantastic Fest or something. And
not so good.
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to chime in a little bit. I actually ended up watching this too, just because I've always been curious, and this movie was terrible. So, like, I get it. It's campy. It's campy and kitschy and all this shit. This is a rough watch, man.
Yeah, I agree with you guys on that a lot. It was harder to watch than I remembered. So when I did rewatch it as well, I was like, wow. So I guess I'll ask you, Mikey, would you watch this movie again? Are you put it in your rotation for maybe your Halloween rotation that you have every year?
I don't see myself watching this movie very often, but I always go back to movies that even if I didn't like them, I'll rewatch them. So I could probably see myself down the line, maybe in a distant, you know, few years, maybe come back to it after that and see if I like it. Give it some time to breathe a little bit.
Yeah. What about recommendations? Do you see any person that actually could be interested in this type of film?
I mean, if you are into having every discrimination and racial slur ever known to man being said, over the top cheesiness and violence, if you think that sounds good to you, then maybe watch this. And if not, then you probably should not watch this. So
it's almost like akin to like those midnight, like, gritty, like, cult following movies that you would watch. Yeah. That's how this got popular again, right?
Right. The kind of midnight releases.
Not to mention, this is like really big for being like an unknown studio and shoestring budget. And it kind of opened the way for a lot of people with like independent film and stuff like that. That's one of the bigger things with this.
Yeah, I was reading about the studio, and the studio actually like got the start of a lot of different, I mean, James Gunn and a bunch of other people like started with the studio or movies that the studio made. So it was kind of interesting seeing this one. I went through their movie list to see what else they made, kind of looked up a few of them. I might end up watching the other three just because I get bored sometimes, don't know what to watch. So I might watch the other three just to throw something on and have something playing in the background kind of thing. So we'll see.
Very neat. And, you know, that's part of the reason why I chose this film is I know that you are a horror aficionado, but also you've delved into the weird parts of horror, and I thought this might be up your alley of something that is, again, considered a cult classic, but is quite weird, out of the norm, and extremely campy and gory, and felt that this was something that you could appreciate more than maybe others. So, although I feel like it touched a little bit of a nerve for you as well, so maybe it leans a little too hard in its campiness.
I just feel it's kind of dated as well, even graphics and wise and everything like that, and that might have affected how I felt about it as well. It just seems a little off in the first part. So I didn't mind it. I didn't mind watching it overall. So I enjoyed it still, just for the experience.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you enjoyed it for the most part.
Nice. All right. So with that being said, we are done with all those little mini Oscar reviews that were signed by Nabil for winning Oscar Bowling this year. So let's move on to a little segment we call What We Watching.
Hey, what you watching?
So it's been a while, by the way, since we've gone over what we've been watching here. It's because we've just been busy, right? I guess.
We've been watching other things. We got things going on in our lives. Yeah.
We've been gooning, I guess.
Well, not quite.
Just kidding.
I think for the most part, a lot of us, you know, we have quite a few things that we haven't caught up on in a while. So let's catch up with what we have been watching. Let's start with you, Nabil. What have you been watching?
I've been watching a little bit, not much, to be honest. I've been trying to find time to sit down and watch things. Also, my TV broke I think we talked about this about a week ago or so, and I'm still waiting to get that fixed.
Oh, it actually broke? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Shit. So hopefully it'll get repaired tomorrow. We'll see. But I've been able to, fortunately, to watch a couple of things in the meantime. I started watching the season 2 of Reacher that's on Amazon Prime. This season, for those of you who haven't been watching that, it's about Jack Reacher. If you remember the films that were out in the books, of course, he solves a bunch of crimes, and he is a wanderer, so he has his own little brand of street justice, as they call. It's based off the novels of Lee Child, and it stars Alan Ritchson as the Hulk of a man that is Jack Reacher. This season, he's investigating a murder of some of his old colleagues that are happening kind of around him, and they're not sure why, and he's trying to find out who's doing it and get the reasons behind it. This show it's a slow burn in general. Even like the first season when I watched it, it was like, it's a slow buildup, but there are some really good like action set pieces. He gets very brutal. There's a lot of good fighting with Alan Ritchson playing as Jack Reacher, and so that really keeps it interesting. And if you've seen the films even a little bit there, just in from that aspect, he does come off as like, I'm the kind of like a street detective, essentially trying to figure things out. And that keeps you interested, is the mystery aspect of it and seeing where things go while also getting to the action. So it's been quite an enjoyable show to watch, especially something that's maybe you're not sure what to watch and you can kind of put this on. Even in the background, it'll keep you going. And when you start to suddenly see a bunch of ass kicking happening out of nowhere. So it's a good little show to put on even passively.
I really like just everything about season 1. I heard season 2 is a little different, but I like the season 1 a lot, and I'm wanting to watch season 2. I just haven't got around to it.
My mom really likes it, Nabil. So just like,
well, there you go. So I'm in good company.
I've heard good things though. Nabil, I'm just giving her time.
Yeah. No, it's not a show like
I like the main guy too. I like the actor.
Yeah. It Alan Richard's great. I think he was he Raphael? Man?
He was Raphael.
Was he wrong?
Was he
what?
He's a Ninja Turtle.
Is he in the old ones, but he was Dove in one of the more recent.
Yeah.
Or Hawk,
yeah.
I guess. Hawk, sorry.
Hawk, yeah.
In Titans.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, he's a great actor in this, and he plays Jack Reacher well. I think he definitely mirrors what you're envisioning of Jack Reacher to be compared to what, you know, Tom Cruise is great and everything, but like what the books were, at least I read the first couple books a while back, and he was much bigger. So this really, he does a good job portraying him. So if anything, that brings you into the realism. But besides that, kind of leaning in a little bit more on the Amazon side and a kind of a beefcake here, I watched Roadhouse. That's the new film with Jake Gyllenhaal, where it's a little different take on the Patrick Swayze film, But in this film, the Jake Gyllenhaal's character Dalton, he's an ex-UFC fighter, and he essentially becomes some kind of bodyguard or bouncer at a roadhouse in Florida Keys, and essentially gets a little bit in over his head with some bad guys that are trying to take up this roadhouse so they can, I don't know, do things to it and take over the land, essentially. I don't want to spoil too much of it, but it's a very thin plot. But essentially, he's just there protecting it, and he gets into a lot of fights. And the fight's great. There's also Conor McGregor in it. No one knows why he's there. He's crazy, but I think he's also crazy in real life, so I guess it fits him. But I will say I was a little disappointed by the film because there were no roundhouse kicks, which, if you all remember, Patrick Swayze did a lot of roundhouse kicks. Didn't get a lot of that in this film.
That's kind of a signature move, though, right?
Yes. But no, the film was great. It was for what it is. You don't want to think too much about it. He's just there protecting a bar, and he's kicking ass as he's going about it. And if you go in with that mindset of like, this is what the film's about, Jake Gyllenhaal does a great job at it. He got really fit, and I mean, we've seen him fit. Like, I know James and I have talked about it, and watching him like in Southpaw and some other films, he's gotten really ripped. But man, this guy at his age, especially, has still been able to get really ripped. And he made sure you saw every single muscle on every frame that you could. So good for him.
Lovely.
Because intimidating. But it's a good time. I enjoyed not necessarily, I mean, I couldn't tell you much about anything interesting in the plot, but the story itself, the action scenes were great. They had some quick cuts and everything, but it seemed practical enough that I got into it and was able to really stay into the film for that part of it. And there was enough of it. Like, you had enough of a break in between, then suddenly some craziness would happen. You get into it, it gets a little brutal, and then calms down. So there's enough of that and enough heart in it to keep you interested.
Conor McGregor kind of took it out for me.
Oh, really?
I mean, the fight scenes, like you said, they're good, but Conor McGregor just outside of the fight scenes, no. Like, I couldn't take it. It's just too over the top, too cartoon character.
Okay, cool. I mean, I agree. Like, Conor McGregor is, you know, he's over the top. He looks like he's trying to enjoy himself, but it's works, I guess, for whatever character he's trying to portray. I don't think he's the best actor. It's, again, odd that he's in it, but, you know, you just go with it, and you're like, all right, he's just a psychopath, and I kind of think,
the character,
like I said,
that he's playing in the original said, I fucked guys like you in prison. I mean,
I did say that.
Hey, I mean, whatever, man. Whatever you got to do, bro. Marco, what you been watching?
I recently saw The Fugitive, the 4K release, because somebody on the pod here gave it to me as a gift. Yeah, but I wanted to check out the 4K remaster, and man, I haven't seen this movie in years, but it's the Harrison Ford 1993 release based off the TV show of the same name. And I gotta tell you, man, this movie still holds up, man. Harrison Ford as Dr. Richard Kimball is just phenomenal. You know, he's a man who's wrongfully accused of killing his wife after a supposed break-in at his house, and he claims that it was a one-armed man that was responsible for the killing of his wife. He gets tried, things happen, and he ends up escaping, and he's out on the loose trying to prove his innocence, all while being chased by Samuel Garrard, played by Tommy Lee Jones, who is a U.S. Marshal. The dynamics between Ford and Tommy Lee Jones, as little as it was, I could have sworn I remembered they had a lot more interactions, but it's just sprinkled throughout the movie. But it really shows how seasoned these two actors are. They have memorable lines, like the one where Kimball's hanging over the edge of a waterfall, and he tells Garrard that, you know, he didn't kill his wife, and Garrard says, "I don't care," and then jumps off into the waterfall. Still and iconic, in, still awesome.
And he jumps up like it's a salmon over there. Oh, he didn't know the spider. I'm like, sure, it's really
his spider. I know it's been
the one arm, one legged, one eyed man.
Yeah. But it's a really good suspense thriller where Kimball is always on edge, and he's trying to be one step ahead of the U.S. Marshals, but Gerard is so good at his job that he's just right on his tail, and it really keeps the momentum going on the movie, even though there's not a lot of action. It's just the whole suspense of it all, and Kimball just slowly getting away, trying to outwit someone who can think almost as good as him. I thought that was pretty interesting. Really cleaned up pretty well. Looks great in 4K. I think it's one of the better 4K releases. I think that you can still see some of the film grain on it. I know James really likes that. So
yeah,
it's worth a watch. It really made me think, we've brought it up before, that they really hard to come across movies like this these days, you know? So it's kind of nice to go back and see a film that most likely wouldn't be greenlit these days because of, you know, superhero films and franchise films. But solid watch. I saw it on disc. If you haven't seen it, definitely check out the 4K release. It's definitely worth a watch.
Nice. Yeah. I watched it like 2 or 3 years ago during COVID, I remember, just because it had been so long since I watched it all the way through. And yeah, I agree. That movie really stands up. And it's like I said, there's just a lot of, it's like a thriller almost. It's just like, oh, he's going to get caught. Yeah. There's so many like moments, especially like when he's escaping the hospital at one point. And there's a lot of good moments in that movie.
Aside from that, I also saw the 2000 movie X-Men. So this might sound a little bit criminal, but my son has never seen any of the X-Men movies. And we recently started...
Your son's not 20, 25 years old?
No, yeah, I know.
Yeah, no, he's fine. Not. I mean, none of my nieces or nephews seen it either.
But I could have had ample time to kind of show him, like, hey, this is the X-Men. They're not really part of Marvel right now, but they used to be. But I didn't. So
kind of,
now, yeah. Now that, you know, eventually someday they'll be part of Marvel, I guess, or whatever. Just figured, hey, I should really show them what, you know, who X-Men are and, you know, their legacy. Started watching some of the old cartoons, and then I was like, you know what? Let's watch a movie. I got to tell you, dude, like, this movie is pretty damn fucking good, man. For one that's not truly associated with the so-called MCU, and for it being mostly a standalone movie about mutants and nothing else, no other Marvel character in it, really. It was interesting to see like a superhero movie from 24 years ago that takes these characters seriously, but also has like the levity to let the movie breathe a little bit, not be overbearingly dark. But it does touch upon, you know, dark issues with, you know, the X-Men being mutants being discriminated against and, you know, people being, you know, afraid of mutants for being different and for having all these powers. But the plot is very well self-maintained, but at the same time has really great stakes. The visual effects really do hold up. It shows the power again of practical effects. I'm going to keep preaching that on here because we live in a world overly saturated with CGI. Excuse me, poor CGI, mind you. Some of the CGI in this film looks better than some of the fucking modern films today. And I was quite surprised. I was like, hey, bud, did you know this movie's 24 years old? He's like, really? It looks like it was filmed like just last year. I was like, yeah, it looks great, doesn't it? It's good that they went with these older versions of practical effects rather than using like constant CGI, because it makes the set pieces stand out that much more. These real locations, which is really cool. The little standoff at the end on the Statue of Liberty is, you know, it's not large scale, but it's big enough for the plot and for the movie, and the actors just sell it. They really are, you know, into their characters for the most part. I mean, Jean Grey and Cyclops are kind of in the background, but still, Halle Berry is good as Storm. I think Hugh Jackman, obviously, movie revolves around him. Still solid fucking Wolverine from the very beginning. I was like, damn, he's Logan. And Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen really have some good like back and forth dialogue as Professor X and Magneto. Very reminiscent of the cartoon. I felt they kind of like captured that essence of these guys playing mind chess at every angle. But solid film. Solid film. If you haven't gotten introduced to X-Men, or you got kids that want to know who the X-Men are, if you haven't seen this movie in a long time, you know, check it out. Enjoy the film for what it was, and still, it's a solid X-Men movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah, I think we all probably like the original X-Men movie here. That's a film that really just, I mean, if, for us especially, you know, that started us on a path of liking superhero films, at least back in the day. Before, yeah. I mean, honestly, the X-Men movies, though, are probably the most up and down of any franchise out of these ones, truth be told.
You judge it by the individual film, not the franchise as a whole.
Speaking of CG, like, I think the only movie that really uses a lot of practicals is this first one. After this, it takes a dive. with the use of CG. So especially the second and third movie, but I really like the second movie still. So
yeah.
Good time though. Yeah. So are you going to work your way through all of them with them? Or, I mean, that's a lot of fucking movies actually. So
yeah. Yeah. I'm going to try to work through all of them. Probably.
I mean,
my,
truthfully, he'll appreciate them. Like, truthfully, there's no way he's understanding the deeper meanings of these movies until later in life. I mean, I saw these when I was probably like 14 or something. And I didn't realize what these really were until afterwards, even after that, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of X-Men have always had kind of a deeper meaning about, you know, belonging and being different from other people and society against them and such. So they do a really good job with those, especially.
Yeah.
Even the prequel ones, the earlier ones are, those first two are really good. So I'd say
the First Class verse. Yeah.
Yeah. And then
yeah,
Days of Future Past, I think, is arguably the best X-Men film. So.
I hands down agree. Yeah. Still my favorite.
All right. Mikey, what have you been watching?
Well, this weekend, a new movie came out on Amazon Prime. Or not movie, but show called Fallout. Yeah. And if you're not familiar with this show, it's brand new, so don't feel bad. But it does follow a video game series that's been around for a very long time. And this is what got me into the game, or into the show, because I played all the games. And you don't have to really worry about watching those, because they're not, while it's related, it doesn't actually follow any of those storylines. It kind of has its own thing, which is kind of nice. But the premise is they are vaults that are designed to help humans stay intact after a nuclear war. And, or not a nuclear war, but nuclear apocalypse, I guess. Yeah, Fallout.
Nuclear Fallout, I believe is the term.
Right. So, so this follows one of the vaults that happens in that, because there is an actual nuclear bomb that goes off and kind of devastates most of the world, if not all of it. And this is 2300. So it's 219 years into the future beyond when the bombs go off. And as far as like the setting goes, it still has like a 1950s style, but it's very futuristic still, which is kind of weird. But they have like robots and those kind of things, you know, really like cold fusion. They have like unlimited energy and those kind of things here. But it still has like a 1950s look to it. And really what it is like something happens in the very beginning. I don't want to give too much away, especially because it's brand new. But something happens in this vault and one of the members has to adventure outside of the vault into this really apocalyptic world that is brutal and completely opposite of what these vaults are. These vaults were designed to be keeping the human race intact. So they have like the quote unquote perfect people in there. You know, they are nice to people. They have everything they need to kind of keep things going. Whereas the people on top are basically, they've had a nuclear apocalypse happen. So they are, some of them are mutated, you know, death across everything. There's like, even like the cockroaches have evolved to kill people and hunt like bigger prey. So this is like a very crazy, outlandish version of the world. And this person that goes out there is like blind to all this stuff, never knows it's going to happen. And it kind of follows her through this adventure. And this is what I love about it, is because it didn't follow any of the game stories, it's actually, I think it's dated like 15 years after the last, not the last show, game, but the last game that was in the timeline. So it doesn't really need to do anything specific. It just needs to keep with its own storyline and kind of just build a world. And it does a great job of just building something that's very interesting. And it has reasons to go back into the vault and kind of tell a story from their point of view as well. So it kind of bounces back and forth between these very contrasting different lifestyles. You know, the vault's perfect, but there's stuff that's going on in the vault that's maybe not so perfect. And then there's this outside world that is, you know, brutal, and someone's experiencing it for the first time. So you're also experiencing it for the first time with them. And the characters are very interesting. They bring in all the factions. If you did play the games, there are a lot of references to the games. You don't necessarily need to know them, but you'll see stores, you'll see locations, and even the locations that they go to that are not part of any of the games, they are very existing or look like things that are from the game. So it's just a very nice world they have. They build upon it overall. Even the last scene in the whole series, not spoiling anything here, so don't worry about it. But even that kind of leaves you kind of wanting more. So it's just a nice overall storyline. It's well acted. The characters are interesting. The relationships they build over time are nice. The storylines are nice and clean. Just overall, just a really, I really enjoyed this movie. I recommend anybody whether you've seen the games or played the games or not, check this one out. If you don't like it after the first episode, you don't have to finish it, but I think you will. The first episode's fantastic, in my opinion.
I just recently started the show myself and saw the first two episodes, and I've never played any of the games, Mikey. I've only seen parts of it, and I know friends and family that have played it. But I think it does a good job at explaining this world and like what's been going on. It does enough where it's not fully holding your hand, but it gives you enough to follow along and see like, oh, okay, I see what's going on. And they do a good job at explaining things through dialogue in a non-cheesy way and not fully talking at you. Some of it is kind of like shown to you, which is awesome. And, you know, it begs to question the mind a little bit. The violence is pretty gory in this show. And they do a really good job at using a mix of CGI and practical effects for when like someone gets shot or get like a limb blown off or something. I'm like, oh shit, that looks pretty cool. They didn't go cheap on this. The tech, kind of like what Mikey said, is very like it's like cyberpunk almost. It's very retro. Like it's 50s tech mixed with like modern tech. So like a lot of the props are like very original and very world building. So I'm enjoying it so far with just the first two episodes. I'm excited to see more.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it going forward. Well, other than this movie or this show, I've also seen a few movies here. So one I would like to talk about is Civil War. I saw this with James in the theater. It's still currently in the theaters. And this movie, it follows a few reporters or some journalists, and specifically Kirsten Dunst is a photographer. And there's also a few people that tag along with them through this world that's like a dystopian future. It's not like a different timeline than what we have here, where Texas and California forces kind of combine and there's like a civil war inside of the U.S. And they're trying to get to D.C. to interview the president. And it just basically follows these journalists on their way to this. And it's not a world that's very kind to travelers, I guess. And it just follows this journalism. And there's just a few people on a car and just the events that they kind of go through getting to D.C. to interview the president. And this movie, in my opinion, is very well shot. The acting is very well done. And the thing that I appreciated the most is I feel like they just really portray like the battle scenes and like the just the craziness that happens in war and both sides of things. They just portray it very well. And it's very intense. There's a lot to take in. And it's almost like this could actually happen at some point. I know it's not, we're not like that level right now, but it almost feels like it's possible. And it really kind of hits you. And it's just, there are some scenes where they're just like, people are like screaming, but they don't actually hear it. And I love those scenes. There is just dead bodies that are just like in the middle of a road. And it's just enough to just take it in a little bit. Like what happened in this whole scene? The battle scenes are just the sound alone. I don't know if it was the theater we're in. Our theater is always loud.
Yeah,
but it just worked for this. It just worked for this film, though. The sound effects in the battles were just well done. You can hear these guns and they're just blaring. And you're seeing it from these eyes of these journalists instead of the eyes of the soldier. So you kind of get a different point of view of how this war looks. And I just think it just works overall. I really enjoyed the movie. I don't think there's one thing about it that I didn't like other than the music. I thought the music kind of took me out a little bit. But it wasn't enough to even complain about. That's a very
Alex Garland like
thing. So. But other than that, I love this movie. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I liked it too. It was A24 is trying to get into bigger films. They announced last year, so this is one of their first releases in IMAX. And it's, you know, quite frankly, quite a thriller. It's really gritty. I like the feel of it all. You get down and dirty. We follow a younger girl that tags along with this group that is trying to kind of, she sees Kirsten Dunst's character as kind of a hero to her, and she's trying to be a war photographer herself. In the process, she kind of is discovering like the horrors of war and what it can do to people overall too. And it's really well done. Supposedly Alex Garland's last film too. He's fallen out of love with filmmaking, so that's fine. I mean, I've always said I think he's a better writer regardless, so that's fine by me. But the film itself, I think if that's his last film, I think it's a really good one to go off with a bang, if you know what I mean. So,
a nice send off, yeah.
Did you see it too, Nabil?
Yeah, I did. I echo a lot of the sentiments already, but yeah, it's a very interesting film. And I know I see Mark over here. He's already got his fatigues on and he he's ready to go and take action. Not sure what he's going to do, but look out, ladies. He's out in the prowl.
I want practical effects to come back.
All right, so that comes down to me now here. I also saw a movie with Mikey, a horror film called The First Omen, which is a prequel to the original Omen film. I won't lie. The trailers look like dog shit for this movie, guys. Didn't look good.
It really didn't look good at all.
I was like, what the fuck is all this? You know, it's just one of those things where I've never been a huge fan of The Omen, but I've appreciated it. I think I'm pretty sure I've seen the original, but I hadn't seen it in so long. But I saw like the 2005 or 6 reboot, and I thought it was terrible. So it was like one of those things where, you know, maybe that blended into my mind of like what could happen. But if you've ever seen the newest film, Immaculate, right, with Sydney Sweeney, this is like a better version of that movie, which is fucking insane to say. It's basically the same movie.
Interesting.
So it's just 1,000 times better. This movie was really good, just to let you know. Like, this movie surprised the shit out of me. I couldn't believe how much I liked this movie. It's set in 1971. We're following a young nun named Margaret, played by Nell Tiger Free, who, if you ever saw the M. Night Shyamalan show Servant, she's one of the main characters in that one. I feel like this is maybe her breakout role now because people can finally see her in something bigger than an Apple TV Plus show. And she basically is going to a convent in Italy, and then she just discovers there's some crazy shit going on at this convent that basically this kind of rebellious group of, I guess, priests and nuns are trying to bring about the Antichrist. So, very well acted. The scares don't always rely on jump scares in this one. It's more creepy, I would say. It's also very fucking gory, which surprised me, by the way. Didn't realize how gory it was going to be. Like, the gore is intense in this film to the point where it's almost disturbing to even look at certain scenes, especially near the end. It's like, oh my God. So, if you're a fan, and then, by the way, I did also watch The Omen right after this. It connects perfectly to the original Omen film too. That it makes you almost appreciate The Omen, the 1978 film, a little bit more because of how well they connected it. You can tell that there was a lot of passion in this movie, and it was one of the surprising films I've seen this year. That might even, as of right now, is in one of the top films of the year. So if you're into a horror film, it's the one to see, man. So.
Yeah, I saw it, like he said. I saw it with him, and it's fantastic. I thought it was really good, and then he watched the original Omen, told me, hey, man, it connects super well, and I went ahead and watched that too, and like you said, just really blends together super well. Definitely a good combo to watch, and I hadn't seen the original one in super long time, so it was a nice refreshing week, I guess, when I watched those two.
Yeah. I'll bring it up then, too. Fuck it. I saw Monkey Man. I feel like Nabil and Mikey, you guys saw this too. Dev Patel produced, acted, broke his hands, broke his ribs, all this bullshit just to make this movie. Jordan Peele bought it from Netflix. It was originally going to go on Netflix, which would have been a fucking shame because I think Netflix just hides a lot of good movies in there. So we got an actual release here. It's basically, it's a revenge film. Basically, this guy comes in and he's trying to get back at these people that are behind the murder of his mother and such. It's set in India. Obviously. And it's grimy. It's grimy as fuck. That's what I got to say right now, guys. Lots of action. I guess if you're not in a shaky cam, though, there's a lot of shaky cam in this. So Born One.
He had an iPhone and a dream.
He made it work. So, I mean, I'm going to let you know right now, though. Absolutely really enjoyed the film. I will say not as much action as I thought there would be, though. Overall, but Mikey and I know because we dozed off in the middle a little bit together. At one point, I said, "Oh shit, man, what happened? The lady died or some shit?" Trying to piece together a plot point for like a good 5 minutes, I was like, "Fuck!" So the one you're talking about, people getting ripped. Deb Patel just got ripped as fuck for this movie too. And there is some. I would say the last act of the film though is pretty intense, and I really enjoyed the. It's so over the top, though, but it's like, you know what? I'm just here to just see some John Wick-esque kind of style. And I've always had kind of a soft spot for Dev Patel, right? So I was like, you know what? Fuck it. This doesn't make any sense. No man could do this, but I mean, I'll roll with it. Fuck it, you know? Like, so this is Indian John Wick.
Look, all he needed was a rice bag to be able to punch on for a little bit, and then he's got God-like.
Dude, I've got that set up in my backyard right now, so a bunch of trannies, too, just staring at me while I'm doing it, kicking it. Yeah, so What a weird combo, right? Like, straight up. Would have never thought those words would come out of my mouth. I was like, oh, so the transsexuals helped them. Nice. And then meanwhile, I was like, did I miss 10 minutes of the plot?
He's like, what's happening?
Where the fuck is he right now? So,
is this still India? Where did he go?
I was like, he's at a temple now? Wasn't he in the city? Wait, is this Thailand? Where the fuck is he, man? But no, I mean,
you saw the extras. You know he was. He was shooting India.
I will tell you this much though: if you are looking for an action film, this will satisfy you. This is a solid movie. So, all right, I'm going to bring up one last movie here, guys, that I saw. It's actually between two. I'm torn between bringing both of them up. But I saw a movie that I've been trying to watch for a while called Sorcerer. Via the Criterion channel, by the way, because Nabil bought me a subscription there. So I usually will watch some weird stuff on there sometimes. This is directed by William Friedkin, who you guys will probably know most best by for directing The Exorcist. That's obviously his biggest movie. But this movie is about four convicts that are on the run out in Colombia. You know how it is. Came out in 1977. So we're following four dudes. Basically, the main guy his name is Jack. He's played by Roy Schneider, who, once again, if you've ever seen Jaws, he's the sheriff. And they basically are tasked because they're trying to get out of this place. They're like, he's a bank robber. Another guy's an assassin. Another dude's a terrorist. Another guy's a corrupt banker. Like the greatest like quadrilogy of fucking people you could find, right? So they are tasked by a company to bring this nitroglycerin, these dynamite sticks, 218 miles away. They can't fly it because it was improperly stored. And if you even shake them a little bit, they explode, right? So the movie is about them taking them on like the ghettoest trucks in the world, by the way. They're just piecing them together from a junkyard. And the traveling, there's two in each truck, and they're traveling all the way 282 miles to an oil field that's exploded. And the only way to get rid of it is if you explode the dirt on top and it has to collapse in itself, right? That's the only way to do it, supposedly. Maybe in 1977. I feel like there's a better way now. There's got to be, right? The whole time I was just thinking. I was like, that's the only thing they can do. Can't wait for more. So, and this will give them enough money to get out of the country finally and get their lives back, et cetera, right? It is really tense, this entire movie, man. It's a lot of setup at the beginning. It's a little slow. I won't lie. A slow burn to begin. But man, it is shot super well acted. There is some scenes that I don't know how they filmed it. It looks like literally there's a scene where trucks are trying to cross like a rickety bridge. It's like the famous scene from this movie. And the bridge is literally falling apart. And it's just, it is so tense the entire time. It's like, did they really, I mean, they must have really done this. Because there's some shit going on in this movie. It's just insane. So I really liked it though. Like I said, it didn't do well at its time because it came out around the same time as Star Wars. But it's when one of those movies that is now kind of a cult classic and one of the more well-known William Friedkin movies. So outside of The Exorcist, obviously. But if you've never seen it, this thing hits, man. Streaming on the Criterion channel, I'd highly recommend.
And I might need to check this one out.
I was going to say, Nabil, this would be right up your alley, by the way.
Yeah, especially after watching Marathon Man with him. I was like, I got to see the Roy Schneider films.
Yeah, strangely enough, another Roy Schneider film where he's not the fucking sheriff of a eastern coast town. During July 4th weekend.
He's not yelling at a fucking 50-foot shark.
Yeah. He's like, we're going to need a bigger boat. Loose sig and shit. Right. That's everything I've been watching, guys. Let's move on now to our main review of True Lies.
Hello, Tactel Systems. Mr. Tasker's office.
Hi, it's Helen. Is he in?
Harry's in a sales meeting, Mrs. Tasker.
I mean, it's not like he's saving the world or anything. I mean, he's a sales rep, for Christ's sake.
Transmitting now.
These are encrypted files, guys. It's going to take me just a few minutes.
Whenever I can't sleep, I just ask him to tell me about his day.
May I see your invitation, please?
Sure. Here's my invitation.
6 seconds and I'm out.
Mr. President, one of our best men is inside.
That's him. Can you lean back a second? This is the problem with terrorists. They're really inconsiderate.
She really doesn't know.
Harry. You guys are fake, man. He's taking credit for our moves.
You know what this is? This is a water heater?
Harry, listen!
Our
So True Lies is sitting at a 71% of Rotten Tomatoes. And the description of this movie is a fearless globetrotting terrorist battling secret agent. Say that five times, Bill. Has his life turned upside down when he discovers his wife might be having an affair with a used car salesman while terrorists smuggle nuclear warheads into the United States. This is directed and written by James Cameron. At this point, he was the king of the world, almost. Not quite. 3 years later, he would, but he's pretty high up because of Terminator 2 Judgment Day, filmed in 1991. This was released on July 12, 1994, with a budget, by the way, first movie ever to hit a $100 million budget was True Lies, just to let you know. So, first movie to ever get $100 to $120 million budget, but box office-wise, it made $378.9 million, so it did make a lot of money.
That had to have been salaries.
Well, I mean, I think also just doing the Florida Keys fucking bridge, they actually shut it down. Yeah. So, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger as Harry Tasker, Jamie Lee Curtis as Helen Tasker, Tom Arnold as Albert Gibb Gibson, Bill Paxton as Simon, Tia Carrera as Juno Skinner, Nabil Lothay as, Art Malik as Salim Abu Aziz, Eliza Dushku as Dana Tasker, Grant Heslov as Faisal, and Charlton Heston as Spencer Trilby. Let's start it like we've been starting with all these James Cameron films. What is your history with True Lies? We'll start with you, Nabil.
Oh, I grew up on this film. This is my favorite.
You were in the movie. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I was in the movie. Nabil. Got the cameo, everything that was going on there. What can I say? I've seen this film so many times. I saw it on HBO. I've seen it on, I think I've owned it at a certain point on DVD and on VHS. I've seen this so many times. I will say we're going to talk about it a bit more, but there were some things seeing it in 4K that I didn't know was as noticeable until I did watch it.
I have a feeling I know what you're talking about. Yeah. It involves somebody coming down a mountain in the beginning. Yes.
I was like, oh, that's not the same person.
I was like, oh man, that's a stunt guy. Holy shit, that's noticeable. All right, okay. What about you, Marco? What's your history with True Lies?
I've seen this movie quite a few times also. Saw it in theaters. I actually have a distinct memory of my cousin working as a assistant manager to the old Cinema 6 in Fairfield, and he could always see early screenings, and he took my brother and not me, and I, for the longest time, never forgave him for that. I was so pissed off because we saw the trailers and we wanted to see this movie. And they just kept talking about how great it was, and I was so fucking pissed off. But yeah, I saw it quite a few times in theaters, actually, and then multiple times at home. Yeah.
Nice. What about you, Mikey?
I've only seen this movie a couple times, and it's been a super long time since I've seen it. So I don't have too much history with it, but I do have seen it a few times. So
I'm actually more in line with you and Mikey. I maybe watched it when I was a kid. Because I remember that bridge scene like a lot for some reason. Or am I mixing it with Mission Impossible 3 right now? I don't know. Maybe I am. There's a bridge scene in that too where they're just blowing shit up, right?
Yep.
But truthfully, I do remember some parts of this. I watched it later on in life too. But I owned it on DVD too. That was the most recent. I watched it like three or four years ago when it was out. Just because I remember. I mean, I have a review from even 2 years ago, so... Obviously, I was like, this needs a 4K restoration. Because once again, no Blu-ray for this movie. No HD streaming of this ever until recently. So, yeah. But did not see this in theaters because I was only like 5. Let's jump into the movie then. Really like what we thought about it for this watch. I will start back with you then, Nabil. What are your thoughts on the movie? What works for you? What doesn't work for you?
Well, the film is still fun. Arnold Schwarzenegger is hilarious in this film. Him and Jamie Lee Curtis's chemistry, I think, worked really well for the type of character she was playing over here. I forgot how much I enjoyed Tom Arnold in this film. He was funny. It's been a few years since I've actually watched it, but just everything kind of coming back, the dynamic's really fun. The plot is just silly. A lot of things that I was saying as I was watching the film, and I was talking to my wife about this as well, was that this film knows that it's not trying to be serious and isn't trying to pretend like it's a serious spy film or anything like that. It's just having fun with it. It's doing crazy action. It's got a very crazy out there plot line, and you go with it as it comes. I mean, there's a whole plot about his wife, you know, having an affair that went way longer than I realized. that whole thing was the main part of the story. If they kind of just put to the side the actual main plot of what the film was going about, the terrorist thing, to go and focus on his wife, which, again, you just kind of go with it. It's fun. So I really enjoyed just going back and revisiting this and seeing how long some of the action scenes were, what those set pieces were, and just how much fun the film was as you kind of went through it without it feeling like it's trying to be too heavy-handed on the seriousness, technically speaking, of what the plot was originally premised as. Well, what I'll say didn't work, just to add on just a little bit, there, it's very evident some of the cuts. I don't know if this was just because of the remaster or something, but I've noticed a lot more of like, I saw a lot of a stuntman that I didn't realize was in this film. I think we're talking a little bit there. He's just not Arnold Schwarzenegger. Even the guy who's playing me, you know, Art Malik, Salim Abu Aziz, yeah. His stuntman on the motorcycle scene, very prevalent face on there. I'm just like, wow, I can really see that it's not the same guy. And I thought there was a lot more of them doing their own stunts. At least I thought I remembered that. But watching it here, I'm like, no, there's a... They did not want Arnold doing any of his running, any of his pretending like he's shooting. Nope, just only close-ups do you get to see him.
It was funny because like, they don't even try to hide it a lot of times.
No.
Like, oh, shit, this is hella blatant. And I was like, oh, my God, that guy doesn't even look like him.
There was no quick cuts. He's, you know, running down a mountain, and it's just, you see his face.
Yeah.
They weren't even trying to make it shaky or anything like that. I'm like, okay, yeah. I guess we just overlooked that, you know, as he was remastering
don't
it.
Don't recall that either, even on the DVD. Of it, because the resolution is so shitty. I was like, I don't remember that at all. I was like, what the hell?
I just remember being that clear. I like the horse chasing. I thought Arnold did most of that, but apparently that's not the case. So, yeah.
Dang, that, Nabil, I think technology destroyed Nabil's thoughts now.
It really did. Yeah. Watching it, I feel that editing maybe isn't as strong as I remember it because of, you know, it's James Cameron and some of the films he's already done. We talked about Terminator. I'm hoping, I haven't seen Terminator in 4K, so maybe if I see that, Terminator 2, I should say, that in 4K.
I hate to break to you, but the Terminator 4K is often on people's lists of the worst 4Ks out. So,
really? Along with
Pirates of the Caribbean, American Graffiti, a few other ones, unfortunately. So,
So I might be disappointed in those, too.
Yeah. Mikey, what about you? What did you think of the movie? What worked, what didn't work for you, man?
So I watched this from my brother-in-law, Alan, and he is the biggest fan of this movie, so just kind of premise of that. So I had that going
was
with me
quoting
the
whole time.
He was saying the lines before the lines happened.
God, you gotta love somebody like that, right?
Yeah, really, but it was fun. I mean, I think this movie is just, you know, in a one word description is fun, right? I mean, the action's over the top. The comedy is timing is done well, in my opinion. And it's also over the top, cartoony kind of style. It's like screwball kind of comedy. And then wrapped up into that, there's like also a side story with a decent love story in it. And these kind of come together. And I thought the pacing of the movie was really done. Like there's always something happening. Every single scene that comes through, there's just something going on that keeps it kind of interesting. Even on the left turns they make, it happens. The cast gives great performances. I just had fun watching the movie. And maybe it was with the company that was having. And it just made it that much more fun because he was just like into the movie as much as I, you know, wanted to be. So it just was a fun movie overall, a fun experience. I hadn't seen the movie in a while. So it was good to kind of come back to it and watch it again. Now, I did notice the stuff you guys were talking about, it was like the stunt doubles and stuff. But I just assumed I'd noticed that beforehand because it's been a while since I've seen this. So I just assumed that was just like a normal thing. And I didn't really even consider it being like a bad part of the movie. I thought that was just kind of how they did things.
Maybe James Cameron did it on purpose so that we would notice it, so it was funny. That's why.
Yeah, like that's exactly what I'm saying. It's like
probably not.
No, I mean he probably didn't, but that's kind of how I took it, right? I felt it was so obvious that maybe it was just part of the movie. Like I didn't even take it as a negative to this movie.
I gotcha.
So my negative, though, for this movie are the villains. They're just like super cookie cutter. So I thought they could have done more with them.
Yeah.
But it didn't distract from me having fun with the movie or the plot line or anything like that. But that's just like my weakest point of the movie. I just feel like they could have done a little bit more with the villains.
Makes sense. What about you, Marco?
Movie was fun. I agree and disagree with some of the things Nabil and Mikey said.
I remember loving this movie a lot more before than this time around. I still think it's fun. I still think it's good. I see this movie kind of like as my own, like in my own version, kind of took a little liberties, kind of like how Mikey does. I see this movie as a caricature of the genre, of the spy genre. Kind of like a little bit of what Nabil was saying too, where it's kind of like a spoof of like the spy suspense genre, where it's having fun, not really taking itself serious. And all the characters are caricatures of themselves, of what people expect those types of characters to be. The super gung-ho CIA agent, the super, like, quote-unquote dangerous terrorist, you know, who just wants to kill America. And then, like, the action set pieces where it's like, there's no way he would survive that. There's just no freaking way. No, yeah, no. Or, like, even, like, the most infamous scene, or one of the most infamous scenes, the nuclear blast. I'm like, you guys would have died from radiation. As a kid, I thought that was really fucking awesome and really cool. And it's still really cool. It's an iconic scene. Like, you see it, like, throughout like little film clips and stuff that are being shown about movies. But I was like, man, there ain't no fucking way he survived that. Do we just,
yeah,
the nuclear fallout would just kill everybody.
I mean, that's most Arnold films from the look of it too, though.
Yeah, but it's like it's still fun. It's like a fun adventure. This it seems like it's one of those like, kind of, you turn your brain off, you eat some popcorn, you don't really take everything too serious in this movie, where it's just like, oh my God, it's ridiculous. Yeah. And what made it more fun is like what these guys have already mentioned, which is visibly noticing the stunt doubles. And it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I made it that much more hilarious. The horse scene is one where I notice it the most too. Like, where he's jumping on the freaking police horse. And it's like, dude, that's not you, Arnold. That's not you. That looks like a claymation version of you. But it was entertaining. A lot of the lines are very quotable. And I know the cast had a lot of fun doing this film too. A lot of the cast members said that this was the most fun they've had. Some of it consider it their favorite movie that they've worked on because of how much fun they had with it. Where it's like they just went with whatever Cameron's vision was of this movie, and had a blast doing it.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fun film. I'm not as in love with it as much as you guys probably, but it definitely, I think it goes on way too fucking long. Like, this movie does not need to be 2 hours and 20 minutes long. Like, goddamn, dude. Like, way too long. And I get it. There's a lot of subplots going on. It's a bit of a slower startup to the whole thing, too. But I do like the action. The action's cool. It's very reminiscent of 90s stuff, right? There are some scenes, though, that are, I don't know. It's weird that James Cameron, for such a stickler for technology, like, some of the scenes don't look good, truthfully. Like, the scene where Tia Carrera and Jamie Lee Curtis are on the freeway, and it's obviously they're in just a fake car on a stage, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, damn, he really didn't make it look better, you know? And it looks, I don't know if it, I always think of, though, too, it's like, just jumping to another thing, like, it's kind of a weird movie to Cameron direct, because, like, I guess he just made, like, the greatest action movie ever with Terminator 2, like, 3 years prior, right? So was this just kind of his, like, have fun movie finally, since all his movies before this had been so goddamn serious and, like, precise?
That's kind of how I see it, James. Because yeah. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, I for the longest time, I didn't even know it was James Cameron who directed this movie. Because it really is night and day between Terminator 2 and this movie, to go from, like, a legendary film to something that's, you know, it's good, but it's not great. And especially, yeah, with,
I mean, this is being technically his lowest rated film. Even then, it's still sitting at a 71%. So that shows you a lot, you know? Mm-hmm. James Cameron does not miss, from the sound of it, so, or the look of it.
You mentioned budget as well, though. So maybe a lot of that budget went to, like you were saying, the bridge being shut down and everything like that. So he didn't have
it. It was a lot of technology. I mean, they got two actual Harriers from the fucking United States military. Those are like legitimately real. So, yeah. I mean,
so maybe they didn't have much to work with outside of that, you know, outside of those big scenes.
No, they did. No, if you look at it, they did. They had a lot of, it was James Cameron. He's had the keys to the studio since Terminator 2, pretty much. Like I said, though, it's still fun. It's just, I love the cast. It's an all-star cast. It's some of them, I agree with you, Mikey, some of the bad guys, like Tia Carrera's character, never gets to really evolve past that, oh, I'm actually a henchman, villain person, blah, blah, you know? And it's like, we don't really learn too much about Salim outside of that. He obviously moved to St. Louis and he's hiding under a pseudonym right now. but I mean, it's not a big deal. But outside of that, I think it's it's just kind of like, once again, though, it's like Mark was saying, they're all just characters. It doesn't matter who he is. It's just like he's like an Arab terrorist. Like, that's all you need to know. And he wants to blow up. He wants to bring in sneaking nukes to the United States. The plot is dumb as shit, by the way, if you think about it. It makes no sense why he's doing it this way.
They try to explain how they got it to the Florida Keys to make it seem like now we can get it all around the country. I'm like, wait, I don't understand. How did you get it into the Florida Keys?
And they're like, shh, 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 don't worry. The nukes are here now.
It's okay. They
hit it inside irreplaceable relics. How they fit them inside, we don't know.
And then his team is cool, though. Like, just getting into characters here, guys, talk about any characters you want. I liked the whole Tom Arnold and Grant Heslov. I mean, Grant Heslov is a guy that I don't think he's ever made a movie past the 90s, because I only remember him in this movie in fucking Congo.
He produces a lot now.
Oh, does he? Oh, that's good, because he got his eyes torn out by those fucking monkeys in the 90s. So he's doing better for himself, obviously, because I always remember that. Amy, love. No, Amy, eat your yogurt. And he got his eyes torn out. So,
oh jeez,
viciously. But the one guy I do want to bring up with you guys, I thought Bill Paxton was fucking hilarious. Even though his scenes are too long, he steals the show in every one of them. He's such a fucking dirtbag. I loved it.
Yeah,
he had the quotes that I was laughing at the most because he's just such a goddamn perv, and he's just a sleazeball. He literally is a fucking used car salesman. And even just Tom Arnold, when he finds out, he's like, this is getting great. You know, like, he can't remember. Like, I told you his quote, he's like, ass like a 10-year-old boy had me dying.
Jesus.
And then Arnold just imagining beating the shit out of him real quick. And then he just flashes back and he's like, yeah, that's fine. You know, so what about you guys? Any characters stand up for you guys?
Not Tom Arnold. Well, you like, yeah. I was going to say, I just don't know why Charlton Heston is in this film.
By the way, Charlton Heston, for some reason, I thought he betrays them for some reason. I don't know why. I'm just mixing him up with other movies. Dude, he has two scenes and then he never shows up again. I was like, I guess that was all Charlton Heston.
I don't remember him not being a bad guy, but I guess he's not. So I was like,
oh,
okay.
I could have sworn. Oh my God. Maybe it's the Shazam effect on us.
I know.
Oh my God. We thought he was fucking Shaq, bro.
He's number two from Austin Powers.
Isn't that supposed to be a connection? Maybe like he is maybe connected, or no? I'm mixing Austin Powers. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
He's the fucking Iceman.
No,
he
wanted. They gave him the Nick Fury look because he showed up on set with Pink Eye.
True story. Oh, I hope that's true. That's hilarious.
Yeah. He's like, I'm scratching my ass. Goddamn, such a bitch.
I can't wipe as good as I used to.
He looked like he was just on his last lap already in this movie. I was like, fuck, let him sit down, guys. Fuck.
He's like, you guys aren't doing your jobs right, goddamn it.
Sure, he was sitting down the whole time in that chair.
No, he stood up at one point, threw the papers down. I saw it. Anybody else? You guys outside? I mean, like, do you like Harry and Helen's? You know, obviously everyone likes Helen, but I mean,
yeah, I'd say Tom Arnold for me. He had some pretty nice quips in it. The scene where he's getting shot at and he's just hiding behind a freaking pole.
Funny as hell.
He's checking everything. He makes sure that his freaking dick's okay. I was like, oh my God.
He kisses the pole because the pole like saved him.
Yeah.
I was like, nice. Nice little bathroom scene there, by the way. Very reminiscent of another Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah, dude. Right, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, damn, why is this reminding me of Mission Impossible?
I just remember the old guy parody of it the whole time, and then he's just like, whoa.
I mean, this is almost like a parody of like all these like 007/Mission Impossible type movies, right?
They're trying to make
it's not really a parody, but it's, you know, it kind of feels like one almost.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's heavy on the parody. Like, for instance, we mentioned Spy Hard, right? Bill brought that up earlier. Like, Spy Hard, straight up parody of all those James Bond kind of films, Mission Impossible films. It
great movie.
This
as
one
well.
Is definitely its own thing, but it also is aware of how wacky some of those things are. So that's why it adds a little comedy. Just even Arnold's face when he's talking to Bill Paxton, where he just, rewind back even from there, where he's trying to ask Jamie Lee Curtis questions and he knows she's fucking lying and he's just like glaring at her. It's just funny, you know, like the way he stares at her, oh really, and he's just staring at her, just like
seething.
Yeah, just fucking pissed. And then when he's talking to Bill Paxton later and he's like, oh, I bet you have a lot of girls, right? And he's just like little things like that, right? And it's just like, okay. So
yeah,
we did get the obligatory James Cameron underwater scene in the beginning. So
there's
that.
True. So
Tom Arnold also, when after the Simon pisses his pants, he's like, "Get out of here, dipshit," and just keeps shitting the floor.
Which time? He pants twice.
It's true.
Yeah.
Even at the end too. So what did you guys think? I mean, plot's pretty slim, pretty slow. I mean, it's pretty non-existent here to the most part. It's like, I'll get it. They're trying to get it where the wife gets, you know, he's trying to get back at the wife, and then somehow this gets involved in the whole...
There's three plots, right? It's the terrorist plot.
Yeah.
It's the wife cheating, and then it's the trying to get the wife involved in a mission.
Which goes back to the terrorist plot, though, I would say.
Yeah, so it's
it connects the two together, basically.
Right.
To the final plot, I would say.
But it's like you said, because the film is so long, he just kind of, like, meshes these all together, and it fits. It's not like it's not cohesive or anything.
No,
but he just meshes all these little plots in, and like the first act is about the terrorists, the second is about the alleged affair, and the third goes back into the terrorists. Like, it's just very long.
It takes it back in almost. It's almost like a subplot for a little bit, and then brings it back. Did that work for you guys, or did that? I mean, Mikey, I know you said pacing was really well. So did that all fit really well for you?
It did for me. Yeah, and maybe it's because I like Simon. And like his thing, and you couldn't have that those scenes without like the whole cheating plot line. So maybe because those are like my favorite scenes in the movie, or not my favorite, but you know, in terms of like those are good scenes to me, because I like them, maybe I didn't want to see them go away. So it kind of fit better because I like those scenes.
Makes sense.
But yeah, it worked for me.
Yeah, that's fine. What about you, Marco? Did you like the blend of action, comedy, and everything like that? It sounds like most of us we pretty much did, right?
Yeah, I think if they didn't add any levity to the movie and it took itself too serious, I don't think this plot would have worked, truthfully. I think it would have come out as, ironically, it would have come out as cheesy without the comedy, in my opinion, because all these characters, like I said, they're just like, they're over the top. All of them are over the top, and it feels, it's done on purpose, in my opinion. I think it's done on purpose, and the comedy then adds to that and helps, you know, ground it a little bit, but like, oh, okay, I'm not supposed to take this serious. It's like, this is what they think the CIA guy is. It's what they think they do, is what they think the terrorists do, is what they think they say, blah, blah, blah. This is how they think missions go and stuff, so.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it kind of adds to it, so.
They all think they go to an office setting afterwards and they talk about the mission, like, oh man, that was crazy last night.
Yeah.
Shit, almost died. Like, they're doing shit like the next day. I'm like, weren't they in Switzerland?
Right.
Like, yeah. What the fuck?
No one's the wiser. He was on a sales convention or something.
Yeah, then he's got a birthday party same night. I'm like, he's not going to make that party. You already know. You're like, there's no way. No way. So I talked about visual effects earlier, guys. Before we get into about the 4K, what overall, I'll say this much. It is definitely cleaned up in this version compared to the version I saw most recently, especially that plane scene. It looked a lot better. Even though the plane scene itself is shot in a way where I can tell it's probably green screened a bit there, obviously. They didn't really go on the top of a skyscraper. From the look of it, at least.
They didn't?
Yeah, my God, they tricked you. Anything about visual effects stood out for you guys, good or bad? What, other than, obviously, the, you know, not masking the fucking stunt actors?
I enjoyed the chase scene on the bridge. I know, like, in the car it wasn't real, but the helicopter trying to pull her out of the limo,
yeah,
that was a real scene. Yeah. So that, and it was really well done. There was a lot, they sat on it long enough, there was good tension if we're missing and everything, like trying to catch each other. I thought that was really well done. I also really liked that plane scene, even though it was, you know, there was a green screen effects, especially the end where I got blown up my missile to kill my other friends. So yeah. You know,
it just goes through the screen. I was like, oh my God.
I always remember that scene, and it's always funny just like the reaction, because that's the pink campiness. It's like, oh no, I'm about to get exploded. It's
one moment. I mean, even the fucking part where the two guys almost die on the bridge, like, oh no, and then a pelican lands. I was just like, this is a slapstick moment. Like, ha ha ha, now there's too much weight on the front for them. They're going to die. Right?
Oh. I thought, yeah, I think I like those kind of scenes. They were fun, you know, they were enjoyable. And again, we go back to not taking too seriously. It's aware of it, and you're brought into it. And they looked, to me, for the, especially with the 4K version, it looked clean enough for me that I didn't get out of it. The only thing that really took me out of anything was the fact that once I saw the stunt actors, I kept looking for the stunt actors.
Even the hair is different. Then he comes down and he smooths his hair before he gets in the van. I was like, no, we know that wasn't you.
It's done. Yeah. Stop the illusion's over.
Stop it. Mikey, Marco, any thoughts on the visual effects?
The bridge scene really stands out the most.
Probably the biggest one.
Yeah, it had the suspense, and it has a pretty cool payoff, and it's such a good shot too, and the fact that they actually, you know, used a real bridge and closed it off to shoot the scenes in real location for the most part, I think it helps the scene work.
I mean, absolutely fucking ridiculous that he's allowed to pilot a plane. Right. Like, just he's like,
just torn up shirt.
Don't worry, I'm getting on the plane. Don't worry.
No one really tried to stop him. They're just like, it's okay. Dumb. Yeah, take it.
He's like, Tom Arnold's like, I'll sign enough for you guys right here. And I was like, okay. What the fuck? I mean, we
had the manual, though. He's good.
He did, supposedly. He was flying it pretty well, too. Although I know that wasn't him. I was like, that's not Arnold. But so, guys, I want to talk about this 4K transfer then. Let's start with Mikey, since you weren't here last week to talk about The Abyss. What did you think about this 4K transfer for True Lies? This is the last of the three, by the way, that have been released in the last month here. Two months almost at this point from the James Cameron films. So what's your thoughts on this one?
I thought it looked better than the other ones, the other two James Cameron ones that we did. I didn't, maybe because of the movie style and like the effects that we've been talking about, maybe it kind of lessened it a little bit for me, as I wasn't really looking for the quality. I did notice it, but because of the type of movie it was, I wasn't really noticing it as much. But I did, the parts I did look at and kind of try to pay attention to see how quality was, I did think the transfer looked pretty good overall. So yeah.
How about you, Marco?
Yeah, I thought it looked pretty good. I thought that it was clear. I mean, again, we keep saying it, you could definitely see the stunt doubles, so I think it really helped brighten some of the scenes up. The visual effects really pop out in 4K. Again, you know, practical effects, it helps. But yeah, I kind of like the way The Abyss looked a little bit better. Maybe it's just the way it was filmed. But I feel because of the type of film, The Abyss looks a lot better in 4K. This was still pretty good, though.
What about you, Dubo?
I echo a lot of sentiment. I will say the dark scenes, especially the opening scene in the snow, and then the scene in the jungle, they looked very grainy or something. It looked off, and not in the film grain way. Like something looked off. It didn't translate as well.
The transfer did not do well on those scenes.
Yeah. The other scenes were fine, but those two specifically at night, and I guess maybe it was the reason why they didn't. And I can see the notable difference outside of the stuntmen or whatever, that like the picture was off.
Yeah, I got to say that out of the three, this is the worst looking one for me, guys. Yeah. Out of the third, very waxy in the beginning. I remember the scene, and it's that beginning scene's never looked good, by the way. Even on the DVD, it looks terrible. The blue is very overblown with blues. I don't know if you guys noticed that or not. But even his face, all the night scenes look terrible in this movie to me.
They do. It's not the strongest here. And there's a lot of night films in this film, by the way.
So anytime there's a bright scene, look great. Anytime bright scene, I was like, cool, this looks good. But any of the night scenes, for some reason, they just couldn't get it down right.
I think that Arnold's chase scene looked pretty good. The chase scene towards the beginning at night, I think that was probably the best.
On the horse?
Night scene. Yeah.
It was okay. I saw a lot of the like the HDR, the Dolby Vision didn't like kick in for me on this one. I didn't see like this is, once again, if you look up all these James Cameron ones, people are just trashing them. I think out of the three, The Abyss was the best transfer out of the three. But once again, I think it's because it was all dark the whole time. And for that one, like they didn't add too much to it. And they just, I don't know. This one went to the dark scenes, looked terrible. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But
for me as well, like I just realized I streamed the first two and I watched this one on disc. So that might be a big difference for me. My internet is not exactly the greatest. So if I have to stream something, sometimes it kind of lowers the bitrate a little bit. I just noticed it. So, but yeah, this one was on disc. So that might have been why I had a better experience with this one.
There's really, once again, no spoilers on this one, guys. I don't think there's any spoilers to talk about, to tell you the truth. So this is, once again, though, even though it's not the greatest 4K transfer, I'm glad it's in 4K still. At least it's HD, because this movie, once again, did not even have a Blu-ray release out here in the States. So first time. It's just that.
Which,
go ahead.
Kind of goes back to what we talked about in some of his other films, James. Like, could also be why we like some more. I mean, even though the dark scenes weren't as good, the quality is better because we've seen it in such, you know, shitty resolution.
Yeah. It's weird, though. Have you guys watched a DVD recently? Probably not, right?
No.
If you guys watch a DVD, it's going to look like shit for the first 5 minutes. After that, your eyes kind of acclimate to it.
You get used to it.
It's weird. Like, you'll watch it, I'm like, oh, it looks okay, I guess. But then if you look at something else and come back, you're like, oh, fuck, right? And kind of a weird feeling. But the thing is, we started kind of early in these 4K things. I think we're going to see some really good transfers later this year as well with certain movies that we're going to be watching and reviewing. So it's only going to get better from what I'm thinking here. So there's some companies that do really well with what they provide you on disc or even streaming. So
it's just disappointing, you know, watching these three films because of the fact that these are James Cameron approved films.
Yeah.
You know, that he's releasing, and with knowing how he is with his quality, I know he's heavy in the CGI, but like his quality of those, you know, high fidelity films are top notch. Like he's not, you know, bargaining something low or anything like that. So to see these classic films of his not get what we feel like at least it deserves, for whatever reason he signed off on it, or maybe he couldn't get the technology right, I don't know, but it's a bit surprising and a bit disappointing that these are James Cameron films and they not really turned out the best.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, this August we are going to get the first Terminator coming out on 4K, so I think that's coming through Shout Factory though, hopefully. So I'm a big fan of Shout Factory, Umbrella, Arrow Video, Criterion, all them. They do really good transfers, so that might be something to look at. But like, even like I said, Terminator 2 is not a good transfer, Neville. But I will say this much, Titanic and Avatar 1 and 2 look really good on 4K. So, because he put more time into those, obviously.
Maybe.
I mean, he did enough for the Titanic. And once again, I almost feel like the reason why The Abyss and Titanic look so good compared to the other ones is because those were released in theaters. He remastered them. Mikey and I watched Titanic last year. We remember. And then The Abyss was released last year near the tail end of it in 4K remaster in theaters. So maybe he put a little more time in those two. So that's the only thing I can think of. So,
because they had water.
Or then, yeah, basically. It had the things he loves, everything else. He's like, I don't give a fuck. Just do it already. So what would you guys rate this one, though? True Lies. And would you recommend it? I feel like we all would recommend it. But start with you, Nubo.
Yeah, definitely recommend. I gave this a 3.5 stars.
Cool. Marco, what about you?
I would still recommend it. It's fun, you know, despite having some problematic stuff in it. Still, it's fun. It's a product of its time. I give it 3 stars.
Mikey?
I thought it was fun. I gave it 3.5 stars. Definitely recommend.
Yeah, I still think it's a fun film. 3.5 stars, too. It's probably one of the more lesser-known James Cameron films at this point, but once again, easy to find now. So take a look at it. You can even stream it. So that is the end of the podcast. We really appreciate you all for tuning in. Marco, could you let everyone know how they can stay connected with us?
Of course. You can listen and follow us on your preferred podcast platform. We're everywhere. For a convenient link to all our social media channels, visit linktree.com/moviepalspod. That's linktr.ee/moviepalspod. And remember, hit that subscribe button and you'll never miss an episode.
Plus, catch us on TikTok for sneak peeks of upcoming episodes and more exciting movie content. Follow us at Movie Pals Pod.
And don't forget to tune in to our next podcast episode number 173, where we will be reviewing the Zendaya film, Challengers.
Thank you, Nabil. Until next time, this is James,
Marco,
Nabil,
and Mikey.
Have a great one.